There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
You're listening to Midday Mobile, but this is not Sean Sullivan. I'm Cam Marston sitting in for Sean while he is, I think I hear he's at a Peeps farm. You know, those little marshmallow candies. He can't get enough of them, and he's gone to a Peeps farm to grow and harvest his own Peeps and come back with a truckload of them. I'm sitting here with Rob Holbert. He's going to co-host the show with me. He's the managing editor of Lanyap Magazine. And today during Midday Mobile, we're going to go over a variety of topics that he and I both find interesting, and we hope you'll enjoy it too. Rob.
Glad to be here. This is kind of like Dad gave us the keys to the car a little bit. You know, Sean has taken a risk here. And I know he's got Leanna in the room here with us, so we can't get too out of control.
But I know. She does have her finger on the mute button.
She's ready to pull the plug at any second if his FCC license is in danger. But we'll see.
It would be nice to threaten the license, but I don't want it removed.
I just want him to get a warning.
A censure would be fine.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so let's see what we can do.
Let's see what we can do about this.
Before we get too far into it, I want to thank Tony Tejas. He provided lunch for me today. I invited Rob to lunch and said, oh gosh, I got to change Rob. We're going to do this in the studio. And I reached out to Tony, and we are finishing up right now a fantastic meal. TonyTejasSalsa.com. It's catering. It's salsa. It's an extraordinary good soup. He is also my guest this week on What's Working with Cam Marston. You can hear his story, how he came about, his products, etc. It played last night at 7. It'll play again Saturday, I think, at 2. And again, Sunday at 7 p.m. Tony's got a great story, and his food is absolutely spectacular. Rob.
It is fantastic. And I like that we are here on this, you know, conservative talk radio eating vegetarian food. Sean's out of the office too, so we're really pushing the envelope.
We are going to have his conservative talk radio license censured and revoked by eating vegan in his studio.
But great though. It is really good.
Really good. Thank you, Tony. So where do you want to jump off, Rob? There's so much going on. I listened to the Lanyapod this morning. I picked up the magazine today or the newspaper today. Where do we begin? What's going on in our community that's caught your attention?
We have a lot of, news comes in these waves, and right now the wave is crashing. We've got a ton of stuff going on. One of the stories that really interests me this week is Scott Johnson's story on supernumeraries. That's a fun word to say. It's a hard word to say. And it kind of answers a question that we've had for a couple of years now when former district attorney Ashley Rich announced back in early 22, I think, that she was not going to run for re-election, even though she had already announced she was running for re-election, got signs out on the street. All of a sudden, she pulled a 180 and said, hey, I'm not running again. And it had something, she mentioned that it had something to do with retirement. And, you know, we didn't really understand what was going on with it. There were all sorts of crazy rumors, people calling me saying, you know, with conspiracy theories about what happened. Now we kind of know what happened. It is, we found out that Ashley is known as a supernumerary. And we kind of looked more into that. What does that mean? You know, we hadn't heard about this before. And there are district attorneys. District attorneys are the last supernumeraries left in Alabama.
So can I pause real quick? Sure. What is a numerary?
Look, you're way above my head on that. I don't even know.
I know what a man is, and I know what a Superman is.
Yeah, I don't know what a numerary means, but what it means to a degree is that they can be called back into service in some capacity, and so they receive a a retirement from the state. So back before RSA, for instance, that's when judges could be supernumeraries. That's when district attorneys could be that. They can apply for that when they retire. And it would, if accepted, then they could get a salary and forever and be somebody that they might call back in and say, hey, we need you to do X, Y, Z. What that has meant, what the rules changed back in 21, the rules changed. So prior to that, to be eligible to do this, you had to be in office for 18 years. Didn't count your time served as an assistant district attorney. They changed the rules. And when they changed the rules, that meant that back in 2016, that meant that district attorneys had to start paying into the RSA for one. They became part of the Retirement Systems of Alabama. And they also, when they would retire, if they had that 18 years, they had a choice to apply for supernumerary, or they could take their retirement from RSA. If they became supernumeraries, they would get their retirement from the state fund and get that for the rest of their lives. And RSA, they couldn't get their RSA retirement, but what they could do is get all the money that has been, all the money they had put in back with interest.
They could cash out.
They can cash out of RSA. So for Ashley Rich's case, she had 20 plus years of total service. And so she had a pretty big chunk in RSA. I don't know if she's taken it or not. She hasn't answered us on this question, but she is eligible to. And she is getting a paycheck from the state. Well, we looked into it. We found out we have in Mobile County, we've got three former district attorneys that are drawing a supernumerary salary. There's one in Baldwin County, David Whetstone is taking that. Overall, at this point, the state is paying more for retired district attorneys than it is for current district attorneys.
For active district attorneys now. So do we know what that amount is?
I can't remember it right off the top of my head. I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of like 7 or 8 million for the retired and maybe 5 or 6 million for the active district attorneys, somewhere in that neighborhood. It exceeds the number. I mean, the people who are retired it's coming from the state budget. It doesn't affect the budget. Theoretically, it does not affect the budget that our district attorneys are getting, that our district gets.
Right.
But, it's one of those things, if you have more money, can you do more with it? So, I mean, when you look at it and you say they made this new law, I kind of feel like, to me, they sort of missed a circumstance here where they gave these people who had a full retirement from RSA an opportunity to choose, because when you're a supernumerary, you can, if you've got a bunch of time in RSA, like I said, you can take that money out. You can put it somewhere else, put it in another retirement if you want to. You can get paid as a supernumerary, and you can work as well. So in Ashley's case, to her credit, she's been working with the district attorney's office. So she's not getting paid extra to do that. She also does some work with the sheriff's office and gets paid a relatively small salary there, $35,000 salary for working there relative to what she's been making,
sure.
I would say.
So we can't blame her for there's no blame to be passed here. This is perhaps an oversight that is allowed, and I hesitate to use this term, that allows somebody to do a little double dipping. It's not illegal.
I'm trying not to use the word double dipping, but it is an opportunity to have a choice. If you took the RSA retirement, for instance, you wouldn't have supernumerary,
right?
And you would just get your retirement like you normally would. And to me, what they should have done when they made the law, they should have said, if you are fully vested in RSA, you don't have that option,
right?
But because it does come out of the state budget, and I mean, so it is money that if it was put aside at RSA, that's not coming out of the state budget.
What has the feedback been to this story? That usually gives a, I feel like it gives an indication of the seriousness or the volatility of the conversation.
I don't know yet. It's kind of fresh out of the box, and it's, and maybe it's a little wonky, but it's interesting to me that this is done and that you have so many, and there's, I think Scott did the math on it, and I think there's somewhere in the neighborhood of like 16 or 17 more district attorneys in the state who could possibly do this.
Yeah.
Now, district attorneys elected after the after a certain date cannot have, so like Keith Blackwood can't do this.
Yeah.
He's in the RSA. He's got to, you know, he's got to have his RSA retirement that way if he's there long enough to be vested in it, you know.
They've kind of grandfathered it in.
Yeah, and I mean, he's got a long time is as an ADA too, so he's probably getting close to being vested or is vested anyway. So, but
now,
yes.
If you and I were Ashley Rich, would you have done anything differently?
I mean, it's it would be a very tempting thing to do. I mean, you would have the opportunity to get all your retirement money back from RSA and still get a retirement.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it would be very tempting, and I'm sure, you know, it would be hard to not do that.
No, it sounds like a common sense decision if it was available. I guess the question is, should it have ever been made available, or was this an oversight on the rulemaker's part?
I would say that it was, you know, when they had, if you look at the district attorneys, I mean, this was a way of giving them a retirement if they've served for a certain amount of time. They've served for a while to have some retirement. But once RSA came into the mix, I think they should have figured out some way to either buy, you know, get them fully vested in RSA if that required some kind of a one-time contribution. Because, I mean, if you look at it and you say, okay, this could be 30 years of somebody getting a $137,000 salary as a retirement from the state, that's, and you have a bunch of these people doing it.
Right.
That's a lot of money.
It's the whole Social Security argument, right?
Yeah.
There's more takers out than there are putter inners.
Yeah. It is an issue that's going to, I mean, it will eventually take care of itself as people die. But but that's going to be a while for some of these folks.
Well, I know, and I don't know Ashley Rich. I've never met her, but my impression is that she's not on that close to die list.
No, I don't think Ashley's even 60 yet. So she's got a long way to go. And I mean, certainly there's plenty of others that are still serving who have that opportunity to do this as well.
Right.
So I
have, kind of getting off topic here, one of the radio shows I did, I think it was two summers ago, was with David Brawner of the RSA Systems. Have you met that guy?
I have.
Yeah. I sat in his office in Montgomery, and we interviewed him for the show. And there have been only a handful of people that I've met. I'm curious of your impression. I'm going to go ahead and bias your content here. That saw the world differently than my brain sees it.
Yeah.
He has a perspective and a view and a capability of understanding things quickly that I remember sitting there thinking, I'm in the presence of something different here.
Yeah.
I don't know that he can talk about the NCAA Final Four, but he can see a business opportunity and capitalize on it in a way that I've never experienced. I just remember thinking, this guy's special.
Yeah, he's very sharp.
1 minute, no doubt. Yeah. So, all right. Well, let's supernumerary. We've got a new term for our show today. We could say that the listening audience is a little bit more educated than they were an hour ago.
It's a good spelling bee word, too. You know, it's a really interesting article. I think Scott did a good job with it in not making it boring, because it may be boring to some people because it is really wonky inside baseball stuff. But
yeah,
it explains a few things.
That's the talent of Michael Lewis, making things that are boring into compelling stuff. That's good for him. All right, we'll come after the break. And what shall we get into after the break?
Oh, let's talk about Matrix.
Matrix. And I want to get NCAA in there.
We got
an observation.
Sure.
All right, we'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Sean is not here. K Cam and Rob are here. I'm Cam Marston. I host What's Working with Cam Marston that launched on this station and is now, I proudly say, in 25 markets across the country. Rob Holbert is the managing editor of Lanyap Newspaper, the only newspaper, in my opinion, in the state of Alabama, asking hard questions. And thank God for it. There is a parallel, you may not believe this, but it's true, between societies, communities, nations without a press and corruption. And Rob's doing his best, and his team are doing their best to fighting with one hand behind their back here in South Alabama to prevent it in this part of the world. Speaking of which, and I'm not making this direct parallel, but there have been interesting articles along this line in the past. Auburn University is paying Matrix $1 million a year, and we don't know why.
Right. I mean,
Let's start with Matrix.
Let's start with Matrix. What is Matrix? Folks who aren't familiar may remember a couple of years ago, there were stories all over Florida, Alabama, internationally, nationally about this fight between Matrix, and which is owned by a guy named Joe Perkins, and his former CEO, a guy named Jeff Pitts. And Jeff left and started his own company, and they started suing each other and dumping documents on media, and all of a sudden all this stuff came out that people sort of knew about or suspected and verified a lot of it. Matrix has done a lot of work for Alabama Power. They were doing work for Florida Power and Light. Primarily what all that hubbub was about is the way that Matrix and those companies were trying to infiltrate media. They were paying a lot of online publications. Some of them are a little maybe for sale, you know, and so they were paying them for content, to take up the power companies, to take the power company side on things. They were doing things like that. They even tried to buy a news organization in Florida, but they're also doing things like they had a reporter that they didn't like, a columnist in Florida, followed by a private investigator. They also paid for a private investigator to follow the head of the Southern Company, which is the corporate parent of Alabama Power.
That's a story that I find fascinating, a part of this previous Matrix conversation, is we're going to hire you to spy on our boss.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. So they did that. All that stuff came out. And then, you know, a few weeks ago, somebody calls me and says, hey, you know, Matrix is getting paid by Auburn. And so I look at it and I'm like, sure, they're getting $15,000 a month from Auburn. And then I looked at it a little more and I said, well, wait a minute, they're getting a lot more than that. So they had a contract with Auburn that was signed in 2019. It was $15,000 a month for some sort of retainer and to help them, you know, develop a communication strategy is what they said. But then Auburn has this other thing called the McCrary Institute, which is supposed to be about cybersecurity and power grids and protecting those things. And they recently, at the beginning of this fiscal year, hired Matrix and paying them $67,700 a month. Mm-hmm. So that is over $800,000 a year plus the amount that was already being paid. That means Auburn's in for $1 million a year. And when you start looking at it, I started asking the question, I said, well, who hired them?
Right.
They won't tell me. They refuse to tell me who said, this is a good idea. Let's hire Matrix.
Refused to tell you.
No, not Matrix.
Auburn refused to tell you.
Auburn.
Here's who hired you and here was their reason. They just wouldn't start to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I did records requests. They sent me the contracts, but nobody from Auburn signed the contracts it doesn't tell you whose idea this was.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked specifically, like, tell me some things that they did. They give us, they help us with strategic planning. They do. I'm like, specifically, give me a concept. That won't do that. It's gotten into that. And when I did contact Joe Perkins about it, his response was kind of a veiled threat to me that he had heard that I, from a third party, that I was able to be bought off,
yeah,
that kind of stuff, and he would expose it.
This is all available in Lanyap, folks. It's your newspaper for this part of the world, Southwest Alabama. We'll be back after this break. I'm going to talk a little bit about my theory around NCAA because I've been chomping at the bit on this thing.
Let's do it.
You're listening to Midday Mobile. I'm Cam Marston sitting in for Sean.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Sean is not here. As I've said before, this is Cam Marston. I'm the host of What's Working with Cam Marston. I'm sitting here in the studio today with Rob Holbert. He's the managing editor of Lanyap Newspaper. And Rob, I know there is a sports section to your newspaper.
There's a big one. Yeah.
A big one, and it's very powerful. And my impression is that your expertise is the front half of that newspaper, and the sports section is someone else's expertise. I don't know how y'all are broken down.
You know, I know a decent amount about some sports, but certainly NCAA basketball is not one of them.
I don't either, and I'll be honest with you, I don't either. I did not know people could like basketball as much as they do until I met my wife, who's born and raised in North Carolina, and I realized that this time of year for her and people like her is similar to our football playoff time of year. She's all in, and tonight Carolina plays University of Alabama, where my son is a student, so we've got some in-house rivalry going on here. So my observation, and this is something that that my wife has mentioned, that my buddy Jimbo mentioned the other day, that I read about in yesterday morning, and that I made my commentary this week, which will air on Friday morning about, and that is there seems to be, now bear with me here, there seems to be success in basketball right now on the teams that have senior talent.
Yeah.
Now, COVID allowed people to extend their time. They could play basketball for 6 years now. And those teams with the most senior talent seem to be doing well. And the reason I bring this up is because it wasn't so long ago that the one-and-dones were killing it.
Yeah.
And the youngest people with the most talent were in there winning it, taking off. Now we got NIL, we got COVID extensions, and the seniors are able to stick around, and we're seeing them achieve, do well. And it leads me to this point, and this is where, Rob, I'm interested in your feedback here. Is this not a metaphor, if you will, of where our workplace is going, perhaps? Because we've got this extraordinary technology that everybody's talking about, and we would be, you know, wrong if we didn't mention AI, because every other conversation today includes AI. But I can't help but wonder if I remember in the past, as these people were in my generation, were entering the workplace needed some very specific skills, and they were hiring a lot of tech skills back in the day, not too long ago. It was in an interview with a recruiter that will be a What's Working episode broadcast in a couple of weeks. I said, what's high and what's low in recruiting? We have lost all demand for tech skills. No one wants them anymore. AI has replaced that.
Yeah.
What we can't find enough of, and that we have a backlog of people that we're trying to search for to place into our clients' companies, is people with the ability to communicate, with the people with the ability to sell, with people with the ability to manage. In other words, people with some leadership, some background to them. And I wonder if this little nucleus that we're seeing in the NCAA, where the leadership or the tenure on the team, or the tenure playing the sport, is now excelling, where the young ones with extraordinary talent but not wisdom are struggling to succeed on the court, and will it transfer into the workplace eventually? Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that metaphor is interesting because it is a lot of stuff. I mean, I think there are a lot of things that people look at. I mean, I know with my own kids who are in college, I'm trying to help direct them as much as I can, you know, to find careers that we all look at and say, what's the longevity of this in the world of AI?
Right.
And, you know, are you going to be able to do something that is, I mean, you know, I could see things like even like paralegal or things like that, or graphic design going away very quickly, you know, and those are good jobs that people would have, you know, 5 years ago would have had no qualms going into, but Yeah, so I do think that that's a good apt metaphor.
Well, I wonder if my son, who's dutifully going to class, I hope he's listening, is going to graduate with an irrelevant degree in business. Whereas I can learn to ask questions in this technology, which is remarkable, by the way.
Yeah.
It's absolutely fascinating what it can do. And suddenly the value of his business degree is evaporated because it's now available at a fingertip. And I actually had a medical school teacher say our medical school teaching is becoming irrelevant due to the capabilities of AI. Now, in your workplace, you must see this coming.
Oh, yeah.
Ad campaigns developed, or graphic design developed, just like you said, and even the writing of it. And yeah. Tell me how are you approaching this? You could theoretically, and I don't think you would, cut staff and replace with technology. You could theoretically cut graphic design and replace with technology. What is your position on this? You're a guy that's in the crosshairs of this.
It's, there are already lots of AI publications that are in Alabama. I mean, that are, you know, they're being flooded into various states. They just go through, they crawl the mostly TV news, their websites, and they take those articles and they rewrite them and push them out in some kind of aggregator type thing where they're emailed out to you. You may see Newsbreak all the time. People may get Newsbreak emails, and that's an aggregation. You'll see things on there sometimes that are from publications that you've never heard of, and they're AI generated. Right now, a lot of those things that they generate are full of inaccuracies, or they just make up whole different angles that don't exist, but that probably will get better. I mean, certainly I could take the police blotter that the police send out every day, and I've done it just to see what it would do is take it, give it to ChatGPT and say, write stories out of this. And it does it in 30 seconds, and they're decent news stories. You know, there's a temptation, of course, that people, I mean, somebody can do that. People will do that. There's no doubt people are doing that. I think there, you'll see people open up their own publications and just do that kind of thing. But the one thing it can't still do, it can't ask questions, and it can't really do those things.
And that's the leader, or that's the knowledge of the wisdom. That's wisdom coming out,
right.
Is the questions and the follow-up questions and the way to read a face and an eye to think, you know, they just didn't tell me the truth or something like that.
Yeah.
So I guess bottom line, do you see AI as a threat to Lanyap newspaper?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a threat to a degree. Yes, I think it is. I think it's a threat to a lot of businesses. Is it something that could be amazing? Sure. You know, would it be incredible if I could say, you know, hey, robot assistant, go out and look up all these documents. You know, go get them and bring it back to me. That would be fantastic if it could do that. That would be very helpful for journalists. But the threat is that it becomes good enough. And mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, we spend a lot of time trying to do something that's above and beyond. And often the readership, a lot of readers just want good enough. You know, they don't necessarily need or want that much in depth, or, you know, they just want to know a little bit. They're happy with that. A lot of folks are. And I mean, and all of us are to some degree in stories we're not terribly invested in. You know, we just want to know enough.
Yeah.
And if it can give you just enough, does that undermine you? I think that can.
Does it make a senior reporter on your staff more valuable because he or she knows the questions, the reading the faces, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's certainly, there's still tremendous value in real journalists. I mean, journalists, the writing is often the given part. You should be able to write if you're a journalist. It's really the researching and asking questions and getting information and thinking about what's going on and not accepting things just at face value and spending a little time looking beneath the surface. That, you know, that supernumerary story is a great example of it, that we saw it. Something, you know, somebody wrote and said, hey, she's getting this salary. We wrote it to the DA's office. They're like, no, it's just, you know, it's her retirement. And then, but we kept kind of pushing and looking around and found out, well, wait a minute, there's a bigger story here. I don't think I don't think AI would do that.
No, I agree. Yeah.
You know, and so from that standpoint, I think we're still way ahead of it, but that may change.
Yeah. So if there is, and I go back to the basketball metaphor, the seniors are responsible, the upperclassmen rather, let's just broaden it a little bit, are responsible for the wins on the basketball court right now. Are you seeing, what is the, I asked you a moment ago about the value of your senior reporters, that the writing is the bare minimum. Could you replace, and I hesitate to put you on the spot, your junior reporters with AI?
No, I mean, I don't think I could replace any of these guys. They're all really good at this point. I mean, we've had everybody's that's been with us has been with us over a year, and it really takes a little time to get used to what we do. We are a little bit different than the newspapers they may have come from. You know, they're used to just writing community news, and we come in and say, you got to do investigative reporting.
Yeah.
And it takes a little while to learn how to do that. And so everybody's valuable. And certainly, you know, from a writing standpoint, the AI can write a decent story.
Yeah.
It's fine. But, you know, when it starts extrapolating from that and adding things, I mean, you get back into, you know, you got to go back and fact check. You've got to do all sorts of things with it. It's not there yet. But, I mean, we're only a year and a half or 2 years into this. This is right at the very baby steps of this thing. So it's going to be very different in 10 years.
How do you feel about the technologies that we're talking about extracting your content off the internet and you're not getting paid for that? I think it's the New York Times that's a little bit upset by that.
Everybody's
right now
upset by it. And it's a constant issue we have. It's what Google does. It's what Facebook does. They get paid by having people look for our stuff or post our stuff online, and they get paid from it. We don't get anything from it. When you have AI taking it actually and crawling your sites and pulling information out to use for other people, I mean, there's nothing to keep somebody from going in and saying, hey, AI, give me the top most important stories in Mobile today. And it goes out and does a compilation of things. And it's coming through everybody's websites and pulling information out. You're not getting those hits. You're not getting those subscriptions. You know, in our case, subscriptions. I think it makes it it makes it more valuable for us to have a subscription base, to have a paywall, to make it difficult for those types of things to happen. Because I think you're going to see a lot of the free sites are going to get away from it pretty soon, because it's going to happen.
Is it a copyright issue? Is it a legal
100%,
issue? Yeah.
100% a copyright issue.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, they don't care.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, most people don't care about copyright. People don't understand it. You know, I have people all the time that take our stories and they put them online and they say, oh, you know, I just thought people ought to see this. And like, yeah, I do too, but I wish they'd pay me to do it. You know, it didn't happen for free.
I've seen my speeches featured places.
Yes,
like that.
It happens.
Yeah. All right. We'll be back in a little while. You're listening to Rob and Cam as we improvise to replace Sean Sullivan on Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
You're actually listening to Midday Mobile with Cam Marston and Rob Holbert. Sean is away. I understand he's attending a mime college and is planning on hanging up his broadcaster stuff and moving to like downtown Paris, I think, and becoming a mime on the street corners.
He looks great in a beret.
He really does. I understand today is face paint.
He's going to be good at this.
Yeah, and getting those custom white gloves made so that
I think he's going to be great at it.
It's exciting for Sean to find a talent finally.
Finally.
Let's get into one of the stories that you guys cover a lot that really gets my blood boiling, and that's the All Britain story that's ongoing.
Yeah.
What's the latest? I know this has been your baby for a while.
Well, the latest, you know, is if folks are aware of, we have Ethics Commission Director Tom Albritton. We broke a story back in 2021 about him, his children getting over $120,000 worth of tuition from a charitable trust on the board he sits on, that trust, and it's a highly unethical circumstance for a lot of people. The latest things going on are that there is an effort to revamp some of the ethics rules in the state. That Matt Simpson, Representative Matt Simpson, is the one kind of spearheading that. And one of the things that it would really do is it would make that director have to come back before the legislature every 5 years to be, you know, to be re-upped. You know, if they want to keep him there, that they have to be reapproved. That is something that all Britain is fighting tooth and nail against, because it's such a mess right now. You know, so the Ethics Commission is supposed to have 5 appointed commissioners. At this point, there is a vacancy, and there are 2 commissioners who are expired. So you have 3 out of the 5 3 out of the 5 commission seats that could be replaced at any given moment, which creates a power situation for the governor or the Speaker of the House, or, you know, somebody else that is one of the appointing people on this. The governor is actually by law supposed to fill any vacancy, and she hasn't done that in over 2.5 years.
Why?
I don't know. I've asked them, and they won't tell me. You know, they just say, well, you know, we're looking at it.
Yeah.
But she, I mean, it says specifically in the ethics law that if there's a vacancy on the Ethics Commission, the governor shall appoint someone to replace it. So she just hasn't done it.
Is this a salaried position on the Ethics Commission?
They are not salaried positions, but they do oversee this the director. The Ethics Commission has had a number of issues going on over the past couple of years, in addition to this tuition program with the Mabel Amos Trust, which people may remember me writing about. But they also had a circumstance where they decided arbitrarily just that the Ethics Commission no longer had to provide exculpatory evidence to people who were being investigated for an ethics violation. So, and that's just part of jurisprudence in this country. If you are being investigated or prosecuted for a crime, if the people doing the investigation have information that would exonerate you, they have to tell you.
Right.
The Ethics Commission didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Attorney General sued them over it. It got into a big mess. Right now, there's a lawsuit over this Mabel Amos thing that is still ongoing. What is really at stake to me there are all the people who got money from this trust when Tom Allbritton and a couple of other guys are in charge of it. And I know, we already know that at least a couple of them were friends of his and people that worked with him.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have a person who is the head of the Ethics Commission who has highly questionable ethical behavior. It's a problem.
Yeah. Have you spoken to any of these people? Have you spoken to Allbritton himself?
I spoke to Allbritton when this first started,
yeah.
And he has not. He won't talk to me anymore. He won't answer me anymore at all. But when it first started, he did respond, and, you know, just basically said he didn't do anything wrong because he recused himself from the vote.
So you guys are going to vote for me, but I'm not going to vote.
Right.
Essentially,
yeah.
What it
he recused.
Like.
So the other 2 guys, you know, who are his buddies,
yeah,
voted to give his kids at least $120,000 in tuition. I think there's another one where they changed the name to try to make it look like it wasn't his kid. But
why does this feel like a good old boys network to me? Why does this feel like kind of like what we were talking about a moment ago? The less people that know about this, the better. Let's keep this between ourselves or something along those lines.
Because that's what it is. And I mean, you look at it, and I mean, I look at some of the, you know, other media in the state that won't cover this story.
Right.
I mean, AL.com won't touch it. And, you know, certainly their top political people, their big political writers will not write about this. But they've jumped all over this ethics bill and trying to scuttle that, to try to get that kicked out, and saying that it's going to be a free-for-all for these politicians, et cetera. But it's really, I think, just to protect Tom Allbritton. They've always, for whatever reason, have protected this guy.
Really? The state media has?
Some people do. Yeah. I mean, I think when you get into the two big columnists at AL.com won't write about it at all.
Have you ever spoken to them about it?
I have.
And they've said?
I don't know. You know, we can't get right about everything we don't want to write. You know, that we can't write about everything that maybe we want to write about. We're not allowed to sometimes, which, I mean, these two guys between them have three Pulitzers, and I think they could write whatever they want to write. But there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the state that people that won't cover. You know, there are a number of stories that I just don't think that other media jump on. And it's kind of shocking a lot of time. It used to be the old way. You come out with a story, you come out with a big story, the TV stations do it, the other people pick it up. These days it's kind of like, you know, we didn't do it. We're not going to go after it. And it helps keep corruption going.
Well, like I said, when we started, there is a direct, undeniable corollary between people not asking hard questions and increases in corruption. And I'll never forget a documentary I saw on this in the Ukraine. This was prior to the war. Very clear parallel. All right, let's go to break. We'll be back after the top of the hour. We'll get more into this. You're listening to Midday Mobile. Rob Hobert and I are pinch hitting for Sean Sullivan.
There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby. That's right. This man knows what's up.
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Midday
Mobile, Cam Marston here with Rob Hobert. We're sitting in for Sean Sullivan, and Rob and I, if you weren't in the last hour, had scheduled lunch for today. I called him, texted him earlier this week and said, hey, how about instead we host Sean's show? He's out of town. So we agreed. A shout out to Tony Tejas for bringing in some lunch for us today. TonyTejasSalsa.com. It was absolutely fantastic, and I watched Rob nearly consume the aluminum tray in which it came into.
I was going to lick the tray, and I think I may have eaten one of the forks, but it was fantastic. And the he brought by some dessert too. And
yeah,
I think he said it was his cousin that made it, but that was awesome as well.
Yeah, the guy's magic with food, folks. TonyTejasSalsa.com. He makes some wonderful soups. His salsas are absolutely fantastic, and we can tell you his. His lunches are out of this world too. We're two proponents of it with full bellies at this moment.
A lion's mane mushroom. It was almost like a pork chop.
Yeah.
It was so good.
It's good. Yeah. All right, Tony, you did us great. Thank you very much. You know who should be an influencer to pick up on the cover story of Lanyap is Tony Tejas.
He could be.
And your story. So my radio show, What's Working with Cam Marston. I have been searching for an influencer to get on my show, to interview them, to say, what is it that you do? How do you do it? How do you do it so well? What goes beyond what I'm seeing on my little phone screen here? And you guys, I've been rejected repeatedly by these people.
I'm surprised.
You've hit the home run with these guys. You've got your cover story is on the influencer economy.
Yeah, Brady Petrie and Scott Johnson did a great job with this and talked to a lot of the folks here locally who are, you know, the idea was sort of what's the TikTok economy here, because we're talking about possibly banning TikTok.
Yeah.
And there's all these people who are doing this as a career or making a side hustle, you know, making money off of TikTok and their influencer brands or content creators as they prefer, I think. And so we interviewed some of these folks, and it's a fascinating story. I mean, they all have a very interesting way they've gotten into it. There's a guy on the cover. He plays like Southern Grandpa, and his basically he's a comedian. He's done a comedy thing. He's got a couple million followers now, and it's just basically he took as the persona of his grandfather, who had a lot of crazy country sayings, and he's turned that into a gig, and he does that. We've got a young woman who's a basketball coach out at Spring Hill, and she was at South. I mean, at one point, I think she was listed by ESPN as one of the top 10 most influential athletes in America.
No kidding.
Because she had millions of followers. She does a food thing. Got a guy who does a fishing thing, where he has turned that into actually a brick and mortar business down in the Gulf, down Gulf Shores. So it is fascinating the way people have done this. Of course, Mama Todd is somebody that people know locally, who is millions of followers.
Yeah.
And she actually was even up in D.C. A couple weeks ago talking to Congress about the TikTok ban.
Was she talking to Congress? I saw her in front of the White House with
a
sign.
I think she was meeting with some Congress people. I don't know if she was in front. I may have overspoken there. I don't know if she was like in Congress at a table, but I think she was talking to a lot of the Congress people out there.
What do you say? What is her argument for TikTok? I like it. I talk to people and I get paid from it. Therefore, any sort of national security compromises it has should be overlooked because I got whatever she asked, 2 million, 10 million, 50 million followers.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the question is, you know, from their standpoint is they look at it and say, there are a lot of people who are making their living doing this, and killing off TikTok is going to, harm those businesses. And they are businesses at this point. These are entrepreneurs at this point. So it is a consideration. You know, I don't know. I personally don't know what the national security risk is, what level it is at on this. I mean, we have a lot of big apps that are owned by companies that are not from the United States, or owned by, foreign agents, but I don't know if we're going after those the same way. But that is a question, I think, that hasn't been answered to me really very, very clearly.
What is the life of an influencer? Let's assume you're an influencer, Rob, and you've got, I don't know, how many millions does it require to be considered an influencer?
I think a couple million. It seems
so.
Like
you've got a couple million,
a million or a million or two,
and people are following you. You wake up in the morning and you do what?
Well, they talk about it. You know, some of these videos take 4, 5, 6 hours to put together. So that it's almost a day's work putting that stuff together. So you're videoing it. In some instances, people are using products and trying out products and telling people, hey, I used this, I like it, or, I ate here and I like it. I know that my wife has gotten tons of recipes off of TikTok.
Mine too, truthfully, yeah.
We've made a lot of great food off of those recipes. So, I think the main thing with these folks is they all kind of said, hey, we're we're the cameraman, we're the writer, we're the whole kit and caboodle. We have to kind of put it all together and do this ourselves. And so that it's a time consuming process, plus the editing, of course.
And my experience, which is very small, I'm not nearly to the degree, certainly on TikTok. I think I've opened it probably 5 or 6 times. Yeah. I've got it on my phone. So I'm not the consumer that I suspect many of the listeners right now are, but they look, the content is often compelling, often not, frankly, but often compelling. But it almost looks amateurish. And there seems to be a thirst for amateurish. In other words, you could spend a fortune on a video and it's not going to get as much attention as you taking a picture of yourself taking off your shoe or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think there is that level of sort of this is gritty and it's happening, it's not produced.
Yeah.
And I think there's that level that is appealing for whatever reason. I'm sort of like you. I'm not a TikToker. I consider myself TikTok adjacent because my wife likes to send me dog videos and things like that often. And I've got some people at work who come walk in and say, you got to see this. It's hysterical. And That's a, you know, in the eye of the beholder sometimes.
Most of the time it seems like the discovery is the hysterical part. But when you start showing it to other people, it's just not nearly as fun.
Yeah, there's sometimes I've got to force a smile on it. You know, it's like, yeah, okay, that's great. Go back to work.
Yeah, to keep staff relations in place. Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. How about sending me all those at once after work?
Right. That would be nice.
Yeah. So as a business owner myself with my radio show, I'm interested in if you've done something like what I'm about to say. I did hire an outfit out of Metairie, Louisiana, to manage my social media campaign. Yeah. And the posts that they made on my behalf were beautiful. I mean, they're graphically designed. They were really, really nice. And they talked about the topic of the show. They gave some background on the guest and the stuff that I would think is very important. And it was sent out there, and I paid a fair price for it, I guess. And at some point, kicked back and looked and thought, how many views? I guess that's the currency that we're looking for, huh?
Is I
views.
Would say, yeah.
Are they getting? And then I compared these really professional views that they thought were integral to me. Cam, this is what you got to be doing, man. If you want to be next level, you got to be doing this. And then started comparing it with things like I just mentioned, number of pictures of my people that looked at my shoe, or here's me walking into the office, putting my coffee down.
Yeah.
And it was a multiple of 10 of what people were looking at on my shoe and me putting my coffee down. And I'm thinking, why am I paying for this? Why am I paying to look professional when people want me to look less than professional? Or that's what seems to be getting the attention if that's the currency that I'm after.
It's a fascinating type of thing. I think a lot of times you just have to kind of go with your gut, because there is this push a lot of times to do things that, you know, for instance, I with our website, we've had a paywall for the last several years. The people who handle our paywall came and said, look, you know, we want to do something. We want you to really consider doing a metered paywall, because we think you're going to get a lot more out of a metered paywall, which metered paywall means people get to read a couple of articles. So we did that for last month. People may have noticed. If you're not a subscriber, you may have noticed all of a sudden you can pick up and read a couple of Lanyap articles. And they said, this is going to do something for you. What it did was it absolutely collapsed our subscriptions for the month. They went away. And Ashley and I both have often said, I know what my behavior is. If I get free couple of articles from somebody, I'm probably not going to subscribe, because I can live with a couple free, you know.
When, all I need is two.
And so, you know, I changed it back. But, and I think that's something kind of what you're talking about. It's sometimes the experts aren't really very expert at it at all. They're expert at kind of getting you to pay for it. But I don't know that it's always a great thing, you know, and it is this grittiness and rawness of TikTok. It does seem to be the currency of what they're doing. I mean, that you look at it, the more homemade it looks, the better it seems to be.
You're paying a lot. These people are spending a lot of time, spending a lot of money, paying for it to look amateurish.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of these folks are just doing it themselves, and it is kind of amateurish. I mean, you know, maybe they bought a better camera, but that's really kind of about it.
I think one of the challenges here is that you and I are both the demographic that talks about TikTok exactly the way we're talking about TikTok. And if my children were in here, I mean,
they would tell us something totally different.
Yeah. And it is, I'm a bad parent. I'll go ahead and admit this. I'm a bad parent, but they are staring into that screen. They are staring into that screen frequently. And we're on our third and fourth kids, the first two have left home, and I'm tired of this fight.
The fighting is tough. Yeah, it's hard. You know, my stepdaughter's 10, and we're fighting the fight of, you know, I want a phone, and it's like, let's just hold off on that as long as we can, because.
Do you think the pendulum's going to come back? I and perhaps I'm trying to grab at straws here, but the pendulum come back to interactivity, eye contact. Like we started the show, or with the March Madness comments, the seniors, the veterans, the traditional skills suddenly becoming more valuable. Or is this something that your parents and my parents complained about when they were our age as well?
I think you read certain things and that suggest that young people are putting their phones down more than they have in the past 10 years or so, that people are trying to interact a little bit more, and that people are happier when they're interacting and not on their phones. But, you know, it's I'll never forget when I was the advisor to the student newspaper out at South, I walked into the newsroom and there were probably 8 college students in there, and every single one of them was looking at their cell phone and nobody was saying a word to anybody. And right. I thought, this is really strange. You
this
know,
is it's not it, what a newsroom.
Yeah, this is not what a newsroom like. Used to be. And,
right.
And it does change a lot of things. So, hopefully there will be some pendulums swing back. And I think, you know, just with the things that are happening on the web that you don't know if it's real or not, there may be some pushback as well.
I sense this momentum growing, and I hope I'm right, frankly. Hope I'm right. And it might just be that I'm arguing on to maintain relevance. We'll be back after this. You're listening to Midday Mobile. Cam Marston, Rob Holbert, subbing for Sean.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Sean is not available to take your call. He is at a nudist colony somewhere on the west coast of Mexico. He asked me not to say that, but that's where he is.
I think that nudist colony is probably shutting down right about now.
Well, he's certainly the only person still there.
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah.
He began a trend of nudity,
I think,
and everybody
probably
left.
Was wondering, why did everybody leave the beach?
That's right. Yeah. Splash water on that thing,
like,
before it skin dries
out there.
Out.
Yeah, it's,
yeah. Yeah. So that's, you know, so we're eating vegan in the studio,
right.
From Tony,
yeah.
Tejas,
yeah.
And Sean's at a nudist colony. I think there's a change afoot around
here. There
is.
Here. Yeah, there's some weird stuff going on.
Speaking of weird stuff, wonderful segues that you throw out, by the way.
I try.
District 2 elections. You'll find in me a guy that is politics. I recognize politics. It's not my favorite subject matter.
Yeah.
That and needles in the eye. I enjoy them little. What's going on with that? As a voter, I feel I should know.
Well, you know, obviously we're in the runoff period, and you're going to, you know, you've got Shamari Figures is a local guy, even though he's been up in D.C. a good bit, but he's from here, running as a Democrat. And then on the Republican side, you've got really two people who are not from this area. You've got Dick Brubaker, and you have, what's her name? I've lost it.
The other person.
Yeah, the other person.
She's a memorable, notable character.
I know. Why have I lost my mind? But you know, so you've got those two running, and the interesting part of this whole thing is when we started this to begin with, it was because the shift of this district, creation of a new district to try to have a Democratic district. And I'm not so sure that's going to happen.
Really? You think it's going to be, even
yeah.
though the Supreme Court approved the district for the purpose of it being a Democratic district, it may not vote that way.
I think you're going to see it very tight.
Really?
I mean, this is going to be a really tight race, I think. And because you've got, when you look at the votes just in the primaries, that's been, I mean, I think there were less than 600 vote difference between the Republican and Democrat. Money-wise, the Republicans have had more money.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a tight district, I think. It is a very winnable for either side, I think.
What is the issue that you suppose that would draw those in the middle? Or I guess the question is not in the middle. We're not a state that there's many people in the middle, but would get them out the door to the polls.
There, you know, that's the question, and I think that's going to be the difference in this whole thing is what makes people come out and vote.
Right.
Obviously, in Alabama, there's going to be we're going to have President Trump on the ballot. I think that's going to get a lot of folks who want to come out and vote for Trump. And there's going to be a level of excitement, I think, among people who want to see him reelected. I think you're going to have, when you look at the Democratic race, there's not a lot of down ballot stuff that is going to be very competitive, except for this race. So, you know, the folks in District 2 are going to have to be really motivated to go out and vote for somebody from District 2, for District 2. And, you know, that may be difficult for people who are looking at voting for somebody who's outside the district, doesn't live in the district, or is far, far away from this area. I mean, because it's strung out so far. I mean, you're looking at people from Montgomery or, you know, further on that would be representing Mobile.
It makes campaigning, I'm sure, very difficult. Yeah. Life on the road at this time of year, I suspect.
Yes, I'm sure, you know, and so you have, I mean, they've got a long way to go. There's a lot of area to cover.
Are the Republican candidates in District 2, is their angle, I am a disciple of of President Trump's, or is there anybody that's saying anything unique?
Caroline Dobson, by the way, is the one I forgot. She is running against Dick Brubaker. You know, is anybody saying anything unique? I don't necessarily think anything unique is being said. I mean, it's the argument about, you know, we got to close the border, we've got to do these things. Those are the issues that we're talking about. But it's going to really boil down to, you know, do you get somebody local or somebody close to local? And I think Ms. Dobson has actually sort of been adopted as the Mobile type person here.
You're listening to Midday Mobile. Rob and I will be back after this break. We're subbing in for Sean Sullivan.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
This is not Sean Sullivan. This is Cam Marston. Rob, where did we hear that Sean was since he's not at work today?
I think he's joined the circus, I'm pretty sure.
That's right.
I think he's an elephant handler, elephant scrubber, I think. Maybe junior elephant scrubber.
Junior elephant scrubber?
And he had to find a circus that still had an elephant.
Yes.
They're not easy to find.
Which kind of relates to what we were talking about on the beach where he was not long ago. You progress in the elephant world, but whether you walk in front of the elephant or walk behind the elephant. And I think
makes all the difference.
He's still behind the elephant.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt.
In his career trajectory. But like we said, it's nice that he's finally found a talent.
I'm just glad he's out there doing something.
I do too. I am too. You know, during the break, you and I were talking a little bit about, believe it or not, and we were talking about long COVID.
Long COVID. Yeah.
And I promise you, if you had told me long COVID, if we were talking about long COVID, let's say in January, I would have said, you know, Rob, I'm not so sure about that.
Right.
I see reports and all that kind of stuff, but it sounds more like an excuse for people to stay out of work, long COVID, versus something legitimate. And as if I asked the gods to prove me wrong, it was within a week or so, or 2 weeks after that, that I was in my own doctor's office through extraordinary pains in my shoulders and my legs. I couldn't sleep at night. I couldn't turn over in bed. And doctor said, I was going to run some blood, et cetera, et cetera. She took about 1,000 gallons of blood. And she said, Cam, you've got long COVID. And she said, you're lucky that it's, you know, the symptoms are what they are, pain.
Yeah.
But they could be worse. And just buckle up, bud, because you got about 4 to 6 months of it to go. I mean, there's no diagnosis for it. It's the absence of other diagnosis that points people to it. And it's just been a heck of a ride. And it was during the break that you were saying you're aware of this thing going on in, with some of your colleagues.
My brother has had an issue with it. He's had a lot of pain and just long-term feeling poorly. And he has long COVID and he feels, you know, lousy a lot of the time because of it. A friend of mine has a daughter who has a 14-year-old daughter who's has it, and her symptoms are kind of really bizarre. I mean, she's so exhausted and has had a lot of microscopic blood clots in very tiny veins and pooling of blood at night and that kind of stuff, and really just exhausts her and seeing specialists about it. So it's kind of crazy that this stuff is out there and it's happening. It is happening to people.
Has your brother and your friend's daughter, have they been diagnosed with this, or is that their conclusion that that's what they have?
They both have been told this is what they have.
Yeah. And it doesn't, you know, you and I are neither neither of us are medical people.
No, just pretend medical people.
Right. We had good night's sleep
armchair
last night.
Armchair doctor. Yeah.
Armchair doctor. There's no consistent form of expression of this thing. I'm trying to use my most medical terms that I know, but there's no consistent form. Your daughter's got these blood pools, these blood clots. Right. Your brother, I think you said, is just facing malaise. And then I've got all this pain. It just...
It does seem to kind of run a bunch of different ways, you know, but it's a thing. I mean, there are certainly people who are having this. You know, it gets into those areas where, you know, people are like, I don't know, I'm not sure that's what it is, or I'm not sure that's real, or I don't know. But I've met enough people at this point where to really start saying, I think there is something to this. It is like you. I mean, I probably would have been, you know, a year or two ago and said, that sounds a little strange, but... You know, I know my brother has dealt with it for a while, and you know, it just, and it was really a lot of it for him, I think, too. It was just sort of a mental fog after getting COVID.
Yeah,
it lasted a long time.
I've heard of people claiming that. Each one of these people, well, the one that I can think of, claimed to have a mental fog. His brain is not as acute as it once was. He can't come to decisions as quickly and as firmly. And the one guy that I talked to that struggled with this problem, I just had to be frank with him and say, you know, I remember you before COVID and I can't notice a difference.
Yeah.
You maybe overestimated your talents before COVID or something like that.
I know my brother, one of the things he was dealing with a lot too is like a feeling of like a burning sensation on his skin, or a tingling, you know, really strong burning, tingling feeling a lot of times too. You know, so it's very strange.
It is strange. And I don't like taking pain medications. I love the way they make me feel, but I don't like taking them.
Yeah.
And I'm doing everything I can to avoid those.
Well, they're not good to take all the time. You know, it's, I mean, even your ibuprofens, things like that, they're just not good for you to take every day.
You can OD on all these things. And it's it's an incredible, like I said, early January, I would have rolled my eyes.
Yeah.
Today, I'm begging for relief, going, all right, so I got it. It's legit. It's real. I'm not imagining this pain. What do I need to do to find a way to sleep tonight? And anybody that tells me they have it now, I immediately have sympathy for them and no longer skepticism.
Is there anything you do, I mean, other than taking the pills, is there anything you can do that makes it feel better? Like if you exercise or do things like that, does that help?
Motion is lotion. That was the expression I was given. So every day I go and I walk or I row or something like that for at least an hour.
Yeah.
And
wow. Okay. So that's a pretty good bit of time.
Well, less than an hour. You know, I've got this magic formula.
Yeah.
An hour's exercise plus doing this and this and this before bed tends to make the sleep a little bit better. But it is. It's a big time commitment. And now I'm also having to stretch because the muscles hurt so badly. I have to stretch. Sometimes it's twice a day. Yeah, it's eaten up an extraordinary amount of my day that I did not use to give over to this type of thing.
So this has been going on for you for about 3 months?
Yeah, we're into the 2.5 months now, coming up on 3. And with luck, I only have 4 more to go, three or 4 more to go.
You can handle it.
And it makes me feel extraordinarily self-conscious to talk about this thing. But I guess the point for me is that I've turned 180 on this dubious trend, and I suspect there are people out there going, you know, my shoulder hurts now that you think about it, or now I've had a pain in my knee that maybe it's long COVID. Everybody's going to have long COVID now.
I think it's, you know, from what I can tell, it's the people that I've met who are dealing with it. It's more than just, you know, a little bit of pain here and that kind of thing. It's, I mean, you know, as your case, it's a real life changer for a lot of these people.
Yeah.
You know, it really does have a lot of side effect.
One of the things that my show, What's Working with Cam Marston, brought about was that one of the things that we've explored that COVID has brought about was the remote working environment. And that's a conversation that I continue to have with my guests as they're trying to feel their way through. You and I were talking during a previous segment about a traditional newsroom being full of buzz.
Yeah.
And people wanting to, historically, traditionally, talk to each other, listen to each other. That buzz, that excitement of the newsroom fed the energy. Yet I imagine you guys went to a remote environment or something like that. What have you guys done? I'm I'm surprised by the number of businesses out there that are still looking for solutions. In fact, I was on with a big call with a financial services company out of San Francisco not long ago. And even they, you think they've got nearly unlimited resources for something like this. They're still looking for a fix. What are you guys doing?
We didn't do very much in terms of going remote. I mean, we didn't really do a lot of remote at all. We just went back in the office and did our jobs because it's very difficult to me, the concept of running a newspaper and having everybody out somewhere else that there's not in the office ever. You know, that part's tough because there's such an amount of what we do of, you know, talking about stories, bouncing off ideas, where it's going, what's the angle, questions that need to be asked. And, you know, if I had to get on the phone or on the computer every time I had a thought about, hey, you need to ask this or we need to do this, it would just kill the whole day, you know. And so, you know, we didn't really do a lot of it. We just basically said, if you're feeling sick, don't come to work. If you've got COVID, it's, you know, if somebody brings COVID in, then we have to close the place down. We had the office cleaned a couple of times, I think, but, you know, in the height of all this stuff. But, you know, I guess I probably was never a big fan of the whole concept of closing the economy down to begin with. And I don't think it worked very well. And I didn't think it was going to work. And you know, by the time we did that, I didn't know anybody who knew anybody who had had COVID yet.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was when we were doing that, it wasn't really around here very much. And so I didn't think it was, you know, we didn't really see a huge risk to begin with, because it really wasn't happening very much in our county. But also, you know, you're reporters. You got to do the job. You got to go out and cover COVID. You've got to go out and cover the hurricane. You can't, you know, if a hurricane comes, you don't get to go and run and go up to Tennessee. You know, right. You have to stay here.
Right.
So, I mean, that's part of it.
I think there was a rush to shut down. And we're going to be talking about this, I think, for the rest of our lives. COVID will be a pivotal topic for people our age and around our age for a long time. But what in the world of the workplace, which, as you likely know, that's my show focuses on, many of the employers, and this is, I'd be curious of your feedback here, many of the employers that I'm talking to are saying, Kim, you realize that this young workforce that we are hiring today has never known a workforce prior to COVID.
Yeah.
They've never known a 9-to-5. They've never known a, you know, if you feel bad, or they've never known a time before, and there are some corporations that embrace this, others don't, mental health days.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at them going, you need to come to work. And they're going, I don't think you're right. I don't need to. No one else is, or something like that. And it's what imprinted, and that's a strong term, what imprinted on the youngest components of the workforce about how the workplace should work is very different than what imprinted on you and me when we came into the workplace.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. But it is, you know, I think corporate culture is important. I mean, I think when you're, what you do for a living, you know, certain professions are different than others. And I mean, I think that one size fits all, like everybody should work from home. I don't think it works very well for us. I don't think it works very well in our business.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of newspapers have tried it, and I think people could come back into the newsroom more these days, what newsrooms are left. I think our people really feed off of it. I think they're in the newsroom. There's a lot of energy. They're talking about things. They're doing stories. You know, I know for me personally, going home and working at, you know, the times we were shut down for a little bit, it was miserable. You know, I couldn't get much done.
There's a type of person, in fact, I think everybody gets a lift from talking to other people.
Yeah.
And it's easier to stay at home. It's happier to go into work.
Yeah. I think that's true.
I think I've just come up with that. I'm going to copyright it.
Put it on a bumper sticker.
You heard it here first. All right, Midday Mobile, Cam and Rob subbing for Sean. We'll be back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Midday Mobile, but you're not listening to Sean. This is Cam Marston, Rob Holbert, and I. Rob's the managing editor of Lanyap Newspaper. Sitting in for Sean today, Rob and I had scheduled to have lunch, and I called him or texted him this week and said, hey, how about we do this instead? I've just got this invitation. So I want to give one last shout out to Tony Tejas for providing the lunch. TonyTejasSalsa.com. Tony deserves all the credit in the world for a delicious meal. In my hand, I hold the dessert that I haven't gotten into, but is Rob has consumed, called the Chopped Sugar Bakery Catering. Based on the way your eyes were rolling back in your head, I think it was pretty good.
Pretty good. Yeah. It was pretty impressive.
So thanks, Tony. So, Rob, let's wrap up the show with observations and insights on the newspaper business.
Yeah.
You know, we're in the radio world as we sit here right now. The newspaper business, these are two legacy medias that face their challenges.
Yeah.
What's going on with you guys? I'm holding a beautifully produced newspaper here. It's got a Breeze Airway wrapper on it, if that's what it's called.
Yep. Well, it's a wrap.
It's paid advertising.
Yeah, it is.
So what's going on? What's it like to be in the newspaper world these days?
You know, I think for us, we've been very fortunate. We're continuing to grow. That's not the case for a lot of newspapers. I'd like to think it's because we're producing good content. And I think Ashley and I, my business partner, Ashley Trice, we've always focused on content. I mean, I think one of the things that's very different about us as a newspaper from most is that we're run by writers.
Mm.
Most newspapers are run by people who handled the advertising end or the business end, and they think in those terms. When we started the paper, we thought, as long as the writing's great, as long as we're really doing our job on that end, then people will buy advertising because they're reading it, right? I mean, to me, that seemed like the logical thing. And you know, after 22 years, I think that's a good strategy for us. It's been a good strategy. It's never easy. You know, it's always tough. The big thing for us is, at this point, the big growth thing for us is trying to get people to subscribe. I know that's a hard thing because we all have so many subscriptions. We've got to subscribe to everything, every channel. There's a subscription fatigue that is palpable. I have it too. I mean,
yes.
Everybody's got it. That said, I think one of the things that everybody ought to be thinking about if you want to have a local newspaper is carving out a little bit of money for your local newspaper. And, you know, it is important. And, you know, I went to something the other night. I spoke to the League of Women Voters over in Baldwin County. I was at a panel with them, and they came up and said, you know, there are people got to ask questions, and they said, you know, somebody got up and said, I think what we need to do, you need to have volunteers that cover these meetings because we're not covering enough stuff. So, you know, could you just have volunteers that would do that for you? And people would, you know, who go to these meetings. And I finally said, you know, I don't need volunteers. What I need you guys to do is buy subscriptions, and we will hire more professional journalists to go cover things. And we have done that. We have 5 full-time reporters now for the first time ever. And we added 2 more, you know, a little over a year ago. But we've done that. We've been able to do that because of the subscription base has grown. It's not grown to the level it needs to that I would hope it will, because that's really where it is in terms of newspapering these days. I mean, people, there are newspapers in towns that don't support them, don't buy the newspaper, they go away, you know. And so we're one of the few cities in the big cities in Alabama that has a newspaper at this point. You know, Huntsville and Birmingham don't have a newspaper.
Right.
Montgomery barely has a newspaper at this point. I mean, we are the only, I like to say at this point, we are a daily newspaper. We are daily online. It is a newspaper every day. There's new stuff online all day long. People look at it and say, oh, it's a weekly newspaper, I get it. And what comes out that week is plenty for me. But you're missing a lot of news if you don't subscribe. And it's $6.50 a month. It's, you know, it's cheaper than a glass of wine.
Yeah, it is. So are there cities in the nation that have a newspaper model that's working right now? Or is this the Lanyap model for Mobile, Alabama, the most successful model in any community across the country?
I don't know about that, but I think there are some, yeah. I mean, I think if you look at newspapers in cities where they have been able to get a good subscription base, they're doing pretty well. A lot of these newspapers that have, of course, millions of subscribers are national in nature. You know, the New York Times, Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal. But you know, it's hard to fight. You've got so many different people trying to take a bite out of the advertising apple. It's really difficult to just say, we're going to produce a newspaper, we're going to put everything out there for free, and advertising is going to take care of everything. I mean, we wouldn't be here if through COVID, through the pandemic, if without the subscribers. Mm-hmm. I mean, the subscribers got us through, the subscriptions got us through, and have helped the paper continue to grow.
Would you say that the title is Lanyap? And I suspect how many years ago when you began the newspaper?
22.
22 years ago, you were, as the subtitle reads, something extra for Mobile Bay.
Yeah.
You're not extra anymore.
No, we're not.
You're central.
We're it. Yeah. We're the newspaper here. And so, you know, I think maybe that's nostalgic. I don't know, but we are. But it is the way it is. I mean, I don't know, you know, if you'd said when we started 22 years ago that we would be here, we would outlast the Press Register in terms of being in the market, I would have never thought that. But, you know, they're billionaires and they can do whatever they want.
Right.
They made that choice for whatever reason. But
for every big organization, these Press Registers, and maybe it was Knight Ritter over them, and I used to do some seminar work for them, it leaves... the more dominant they get, and it's easy for me to say, but the more dominant they get, the more cracks that they leave open for something original to come through.
I agree with that. I think that's the truth.
It appears that's been your story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we came in as very much arts and entertainment, and you know, we do a bunch of investigative reporting, and that's, you know, so it's changed a lot.
You've gone from the jester in the court.
We went from behind the elephant to the front of it. I don't know. You know,
that's great. Well, I wouldn't have invited you. First, I want to go to lunch because I admire what you do. Second, I personally think it's very important. You guys are the only ones asking questions.
Well, it's nice to be here, and you know, your success is amazing as well. You've done some pretty impressive stuff to see how far your program is going, and so it's great to be here today. Great to have great lunch and not have to put up with Sean.
Yeah,
it's nice.
I'm happy he's out of town. This is the close of Midday Mobile. Sean will be back, maybe never.